I was at, we live in an area that's very high weekend, right? New York City, everyone comes up for the weekend. So their homes are empty during the week and they need them cleaned. So I thought, this is perfect. So I had this house and I cleaned it every week. And this particular time I went in, so no one's there all week, mind you, all right? No one's gonna be coming home at 5 o'clock. And I was cleaning the upstairs bedroom and the balcony banister gave way. And I fell 14 feet into their living room. I broke all my ribs, my elbow, shattered my pelvis, broke my back.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah, it was debilitating.
Episode of Women Over 50, A Life Redesigned. My name is Shelley and I am your host for this podcast. Thank you so much for joining me. I really appreciate it. This episode, I'm talking with Susan Wheeler, the author of The Lemonade Diet. And we really talk about what happens when life throws lemons at you. Mix up a little sugar and you make some lemonade. Susan's story starts today with when she was 16 and her dad died suddenly and how that put her on this trajectory. And we talked about how, you know, life happens to us and it puts us on these paths that we weren't exactly expecting. And then she had a really horrific accident as an adult, which led her to becoming an ultra marathoner. Yes, fascinating story. It was just like having a conversation with someone I've known for years over a cup of coffee. So I hope you enjoy this episode as much as I did.
Yeah, that.
I hear it too.
Yeah.
We could have a band.
I have some little guitar thing in the other room. Let me go grab it. You can play the desk. I'll play that little crappy guitar I have.
Well, I'm turning my phone off on airplane mode, so I shouldn't get anything. I will be very mindful of not touching.
You know, that's okay. I did a podcast with Heather Shrouds, who is a woman who's a fitness coach now, and she lost 100 pounds and she's a triathlete and you know, is like, does Olympic training with people and stuff. And she do this all the time. Bang. She gets so excited. She just like bang on her desk.
And it was just, you could hear it every single time. Yeah.
So yeah. I didn't care. I just let her, you know, I don't care.
You let her bang away, whatever.
Exactly. I mean,
that is so funny.
If you're that passionate about what you're saying, you just have at it. So I do want to give a shout out to my grandson. I was on Zoom with him yesterday and his name is Zeke. And he said, Anja, I've been listening to your YouTube. And I'm like, really? So.
How old is he?
Which, oh my gosh, you'll kill me if I get this wrong. 11?
11.
Yeah. Yeah. So we were trying to do a project for work yesterday and we couldn't quite get the technology to work and they were getting ready to go to Georgia. So they were super excited. But anyway, Zeke popped up with, I listened to you on your YouTube channel, Anja. And I'm like, I want to give him a shout out, Zeke. Thank you for doing that. Listening to a bunch of old women talk on YouTube. I mean, I guess, you know, if it holds his interest, that's great. Or maybe he just likes to listen to, is, you know, amazed that his Anja can actually do the YouTube.
Oh, that's awesome. And plus there's a lot of reruns right now. So, you know, new material is always great.
And, you know, they're great kids. I call them my feral grandkids. They're my three oldest. So they just sort of run wild all the time. Not in a bad way, you know, but in a good way. So anyway, thank you, Zeke, for listening to your Anja on the YouTube. I appreciate it. So, okay, Susan, after many tries, many months, many days, many years, we finally got together and got this going. Even this morning, we were having technology problems and technology is great until it isn't. But I always tell people we lived in the days of rotary phones and party lines. So this is great.
Remember, we're aging ourselves, but it's a good thing your podcast calls us out right from the get-go.
Exactly. We have no place to hide, right? So, Susan, you have a really interesting website and book and history, The Lemonade Diet. So So I would love for you to tell my listeners about the Lemonade Diet, how it got started. And I did get your book and was reading it, and you really have a fascinating history and have gone on to like run marathons, do an ultra marathon or all sorts of stuff. So I want you to tell your story to us any way that you want and wherever you want to start.
Awesome. Well, I never quite know where to start because we're always starting over, right? And we get through something and then we have something new happen and we think that's the new beginning and it goes on and on and on. So it never quite ends. Well, the book, The Lemonade Diet, was sort of my way of explaining all the things that I've been through and kind of how I've gotten through them. And we forget, is what I try to forget. I call any problem we have spilled milk, right? Something happens, clean it up, move on, get on to the next thing. And what I noticed is I am a wellness coach. I have an organic farm. I live in the northwest corner of Connecticut. And I love preaching and teaching about nutrition because I believe with good nutrition, it all kind of starts there. If you're feeling good and you're healthy and you have energy, you can tackle your problems. But what I found in coaching people was that they couldn't work on themselves in the moment because there were so many things that they hadn't let go of in the past. And it was never about drinking a shake or eating a healthy meal or getting out of bed to exercise. There was something holding them back that was long ago or over, either which way. And when I realized so many people were having things that held them back, I really wanted to show them that me too, we all have the same thing. And so much of the feedback I've gotten with my book is different chapters speak to different people and they will say, oh my gosh, I felt like you knew me. I felt like that was my story. And we just sadly live in our story and we don't live in the moment. We don't live in the present. We let so many things hold us up and hang us up. So that was the reason for my book. The beginning for me, I guess I've had, like I say, several beginnings, but when I was a kid, I was 16 years old and my dad died of a heart attack. He was 49. It was sudden. It was unexpected. He was young and healthy. And you know, at my age of 57, I'm that much older than he was when he died. And I realized how young 49 really is. Mm-hmm. And as a kid, it was devastating. It was a blow to all of us. And we had never lost anyone before. And I remember the year before, it was a week before my senior year of high school. The year before, one of my classmates, Julie, had lost her dad. And he was older than my dad, but he was still in his 50s, I believe. And I remember thinking, this only happens to other people. I was devastated for her. But when you hear horrible things or whatever it may be, you feel kind of untouched or you know, it could never happen to you. And the very next summer, it happened to me. And I'll never forget, I've forgotten a lot of things from high school, but I'll never forget that. And it does happen to you. It happens to me. It happens to all of us. And that one thing set my life down a completely different path. I don't know which way it would have gone, but it probably would never have gone the way it did. I ended up getting married when I was a senior in high school. I hadn't even graduated yet. I married my teacher, which is illegal today. That would never happen.
When I read that part of your book, I graduated in 1980. So in the 70s, there were girls that were married as seniors in high school, you know, and they get pregnant, you didn't go to school, you know, and all that stuff. So those things were, I think a little more common back in our day, but I read that and I thought, what?
But they weren't marrying their teachers, right?
Exactly. So how, I mean, I don't want to get into the weeds with a lot of it, but your mother had to give permission, correct, for you to marry this person?
So my mom was, so my mom and dad were a love affair. Neither one of them had ever been married. They got married later in life. They were married in their 30s, which was later in life for them at the time.
Yeah.
And so my mom just adored my dad, and she went into a huge funk, and she had three teenagers at home. And I think she just didn't care. My father would have never allowed that. I really wasn't even allowed to date. And really, I think she thought he was an older man and he would take care of me. And it sounds so archaic at the time. And I have a daughter now who's 18, and I'm thinking, no way, not on my watch. That would never happen. But it did. And it really wasn't the right thing. It really wasn't the right thing. He was twice my age. And we had a child together. And pretty much when she was two, we were done. We were done.
You know, I think it brings up an interesting point too, in that my parents didn't die when I was that. They both had died before I was 50. But, you know, I think looking back, do you give your mother a lot of grace and compassion looking at her at that time? I mean, you know, because I think we as moms kind of do the best that, not that I'm like thinking that that's something mothers should be doing, but we have to give our mothers grace and compassion for the times that they were in, which I think also allows us to give ourselves some grace with the things that we're going through.
Absolutely. Someone asked me on a podcast I did a few weeks ago if I had bad feelings towards my mom. I never did. I was very close to her. We were very different. She died 4 years ago, and we were very close. And I never blamed her for anything.
Yeah.
And I think it's important not to blame people. We all have decisions to make. And she made a decision. I made a decision. And what was. So she was definitely hurting at the time. She ran away from home herself and went and lived on a horse farm with my younger sister for years. But it was a real blow to her. She never remarried. She never even dated. It was my dad, and that was that. And I do feel sorry for her. I mean, she cried about him right up until the end, you know, and she was without him more of her life than she was with him. So I don't look back. You know, what I do look back and think is that I look at my life right now and where I am and what I've done and the children I have and the life I live. And I know that if my dad hadn't died, my life would look different. I don't know, maybe I'd love what the life was, but I do love this life. So what I've always decided to do is look at things for what they are, take away what I can, a lesson, a meaning, and you can't go back and change anything. So you have to be grateful for what you have and move on. But I understand. I don't know that I would do the same thing, but it wasn't like she was, you know, sending me off with someone who didn't have a job or a car. He had a home and a career, and, you know, he was well off. So she probably thought, okay, Susan's good.
Yeah.
I only have two to deal with.
Don't have to worry about you.
One less.
Yeah, that's, you know, I think you bring up another interesting point too, in that the trajectory your life took with that one monumental moment, and we all have those in our lives, you know, those moments that you'd never expect to happen, and then they lead you down this path. So where are you today? What's going on with you today?
So one of the things that happened from all that is I realized that I had started, all my friends were in college, and I remember visiting one of my best girlfriends in college, And I was wearing, and at the time, maternity clothes were not fashionable.
Oh, they were awful, weren't they? Those big old bows. And
and I had this denim jumper. It probably weighed about 50 pounds.
I always liked how the maternity clothes back then made us look like we were virginal. You know, here we were like these, you know, we had these bows and these ruffles and big old right. chats.
But we were pregnant. How did that happen?
That's crazy.
So I remember going to visit her and feeling so matronly and dumpy, and they're all in college. And I left there. I spent the night in her dorm room and with her girlfriends. And it was just a bummer to me because I felt like this is my life now. I could never go back. I'll never experience this.
Yeah.
And not that I didn't love my daughter and all that, but it made me realize. And what happened was I spent many years of my life trying to figure out what can I do that's going to fulfill me because I can't go back. I did not want to go to college at that point, having kids. I knew I'd have to do it from home. I mean, it's one thing to go to college and be in the dorm and have friends and parties. And it's another thing to actually have to sit in your kitchen and feed kids dinner I said, that's not for me. Yeah. So I tried to figure out what can I do? I always felt smart enough and savvy enough, but I didn't have that piece of paper. And without it, I thought, what am I going to ever do? How am I going to make my way in this world? And what I found was years ago, it was probably 18 years ago, direct sales, network marketing. And that was a place where you didn't need a degree or diploma. You just needed to have drive. That's all it took. You needed to be hungry. You needed to be a hard worker. You needed to have a big why. And so I took off with that. And that's my main source of income. But in doing what I do, you're dealing with so many people and the mindset. It kept coming back. It kept coming back. And so this book has always been, everyone has always said to me, oh gosh, every time something, you need to write a book. You really need to write a book. And finally, I realized writing a book had a purpose because if I could do it to help people, not just to entertain them with my broken bones and failed marriages, that I could actually serve them in some right. way and hopefully help them. So that's what I do now.
But, you know, you've also had other tragedies in your life as well. I know from reading the first part of your book that I did, you've also had other things happen to you other than your dad dying when you were super young that I'm sure has influenced how you think and how you operate in the world now. And I know that you put a lot of that in your book. You write about that as well.
Right. I write a lot about my dad. Well, it's really, when I say a lot, each chapter is in and of itself. So it doesn't necessarily flow together sequentially, but they're lessons. And my dad's lesson was really how to forgive yourself because I was so nasty to him the day he died. Slammed the door. It was just not... And that was the hardest part. So losing him, yes, and that trajectory, but it took me a little while, more than a little while, because I couldn't tell him I was sorry. So I had to get the forgiveness from someone who couldn't say, I understand. You know, it's so easy to say the wrong thing or do the wrong thing. And then I could say, oh, Shelley, I was having a bad day. I'm so sorry. And you could say, Susan, I understand. I've been there too. Let's just wipe the slate clean. But when you can't do that, and that was huge for me. So it really sort of, that set the tone for the kind of person I wanted to be, that I wanted to be. I'm not perfect by any means, but when I leave someone or a conversation, I like everyone to be good with it. I don't throw out words that I can't take back. And it's really served me in many ways. And it's helped with my kids too. because anyone that has kids know there's the, you know, we throw words around, but they always come right back because they all know that story. That was one thing I told them. And then some of the other things, I'm kind of a train wreck. I took my brace off, but you can still see some bruising. So I thought I broke my wrist on Saturday. I was in the hospital. I fell off a chair trying to get something, but I had a pretty bad accident in my early 30s. I don't know if you got to that part.
No, I don't think I got to that part
in the book. Okay. So I was, before I got into direct sales and network marketing, I was an entrepreneur because I never felt like I could get paid what I was worth at a job. And I just knew I could do more. So one of the, I owned a bakery for many years.
Oh, cool.
Yeah. So that's cool. You'll read it, but that's actually a pretty funny chapter. All the bakery disasters. But after the bakery, when I had kids and I wanted to do something, I had a house cleaning business. And I was at, we live in an area that's very high weekend, right? New York City, everyone comes up for the weekend. So their homes are empty during the week and they need them cleaned. So I thought this is perfect. So I had this house and I cleaned it every week. And this particular time I went in, so no one's there all week, mind you, all right? No one's going to be coming home at 5 o'clock. And I was cleaning the upstairs bedroom and the balcony banister gave way and I fell 14 feet into their living room. And this is nothing.
Yeah.
This is nothing. I broke all my ribs, my elbow, shattered my pelvis, broke my back.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah, it was debilitating. I was lucky to actually live through that. And even my doctor said, most people, when they fall and the way it all happened, your internal organs are, you know, all I had was a massive amount of broken bones.
Oh,
massive.
My goodness.
Bruising around my heart. That was my only organ injury. But do you know, I didn't have a scratch or a bruise on my body. Incredible, but totally broken inside. So the cool thing that happened from that was I had never been a runner before. And 7 years later, I became not only a runner, but I became a marathon runner and then finally an ultra marathon runner.
Yeah, and I want to talk about that because I have not gotten to that part of your story yet in the book.
Then so I don't want to ruin it. We'll start. We'll do the podcast next week.
That's fine. I'll be like, oh my goodness.
I'm teasing.
So, you know, first of all, that is incredible. I can't, you know, I'm just like, I don't even have words for that story. But I want to talk about, you know, it always seems like there's something big that happens to us. That puts us on this path. Like you fell out, you fell onto the living room and did, you know, it was so broken inside. And that big event led you to doing what you're doing today with running marathons and stuff. Before you tell your story, I want to say kudos to you. I ran a half marathon once and I'm like, never again. I mean, I like to run and I still do run, but you know, for our listeners, the training and just the mindset to run that many miles is mind blowing. It's incredible. So kudos to you, but yeah, let's hear your story. Cause I want to encourage women our age to take up some sort of physical exercise like that. Running. It's great.
Absolutely. So my line that I always use is it's never too late to change your life. Mm-hmm. And it's even if you're 20, because even when I was contemplating, what am I going to do when I grow up, when the kids, I was always planning. And I think a lot of times we think this is the way it is. So this is the hand I was dealt. So now I have to, this is the new normal. And I don't like, I'm a rebel. I love to challenge. So for me, the running, I started running when I was 40. And I healed from my accident, but it was not pretty. I was very arthritic. I had a limp. I was in, I don't want to say pain, but I was uncomfortable. But once I got moving, I would be okay. But mm-hmm. I always hated standing up and taking those first few steps because I looked like an invalid for years.
Yeah.
So the way I started running, sometimes you really need a why. And I think that's what holds people back. So I do love to encourage people to get moving, do whatever. But we live in that old story, right? But if there's something that is so compelling that can drive us forward. So for me, I had one of my best girlfriends had cancer. And I had just had my last daughter. She was pregnant with her third son and was diagnosed with breast cancer and had to go through that pregnancy with chemotherapy, which to me was, anyone that's been pregnant knows that's hard enough, right? And then add feeling sick and dealing with all the anguish that you're dealing with, never mind the physical symptoms. So I wanted to do something to support her. And I didn't want to shave my head, not because I'm in love with my hair. It was because I didn't want anyone to think I was sick. I didn't want people to look at me and get the wrong impression.
Right.
So that is a big thing for a lot of people. And I thought, what could I do that'd be really hard, that would push me out of my comfort zone, that would, you know, be painful and or, you know, really get to my core. And I was sitting at my son's baseball game and I was watching some people run around the track. And I thought, I wonder if I can run. Because now I'm 40 with a broken body, right? So I got on that track. And I looked like the female version of Forrest Gump. I had on jeans.
Run, Susan, run.
So I ran around that track 2 times. That was all I had time for, back to the baseball game. And my mother, my sister-in-law and her mom were on the track. And they said they were training for this road race. And the wheels started turning, and I'd been going to this road race. It's a huge event in our town every year as a spectator, usually with a gin and tonic in my hand, unless I was pregnant. And I thought, there you go. That is something I'm going to do. Because every year I'd say, wow, I wish I could do that. But I never had run before, and of course, I didn't even attempt to. But that why, and the stars aligned, and I ran that race, and I could barely walk for a week afterwards, mm-hmm. but there was something about it, not what it did to my body, but what it did to my heart and my mind. And I realized it could almost make me cry right now, but I realized that race wasn't because I was an athlete. I had 4 weeks to train for 7 miles. Okay. And it wasn't even 4 full weeks. I think it was 3.5. It was the fact that I was more powerful than I knew, because it wasn't my body that got me through. It was my mind.
Yep.
And I thought, wow, if you can run this race, Susan, what can't you do? And that started my running career. And I always say every runner has a story, and this is mine. And then of course I ran for many years in different races for different reasons. And it's just, it's who I am now. But the mindset piece was the biggest takeaway for me. Huge. More than anything.
That's exactly what I think too. And even though I don't plan on running a half marathon, I still run because I just can't not. I can't quit it. You know what I'm saying? It's like this thing that you do. And I think that what people also need to realize, regardless of what activity or endeavor you take up, is, you know, my friends were always amazed. They're like, oh, you ran 13 miles. And you know, they would talk to me about this, and because I hadn't really like told anybody I was doing this except Steve and the girlfriend I ran with. And they all acted like I just woke up on that Saturday morning and decided to run that race. And I'm like, no, I've been training in the sleet and the snow in February. I love this story. Because people don't always know the before. Like, you have this really drastic before. You know, they just see this Susan that's now running marathons and doing all these great things. And I don't think people realize you have got to start somewhere. You have got to start. Like I started, I could barely huff and puff half a block when I first started running.
Yeah, I literally ran to a telephone pole.
Yeah.
And I did. And then that's what I would say. I'm going to run to that telephone pole. When I get there, I'm going to walk. And I think that that's what stops people, because you think a marathon, right? 26.2 miles. And it's funny because a lot of people will say, well, how long was this marathon? Yeah. 26.2. They're all the same. They're all the same. But I never think beyond. I always tell people, and this is important. I use the running analogy. I'm an analogy girl, and running to me, there's so many great analogies in it. It's stay in the moment. When I get to the start line, I am not thinking about mile 26.
Right, right.
Because the 0.2 is longer than the whole darn race itself. Oh.
Preach it,
you know,
sister.
The 0.1, right?
Yes.
You get to 13 miles and you're like, I can't run a tenth of a mile now. Are you kidding me? So I think what stops people from starting is they don't stay in the present moment. So when I start a race, I'm not thinking about even mile 5. I'm thinking, okay, limber up, try not to get trampled when the gun goes off. Where are the people that look like they're going to take you down? And you just have to really stay in the moment, find yourself, get your pace. And as you go along, you're thinking, you're watching your watch and saying, am I running too fast?
Right.
Can I speed up a little? Do I need a drink? Whatever it might be, you know, how does this feel? Got to work the kink out, whatever it might be. So if we did that when we were doing something hard in our life, right, we wouldn't be overwhelmed. But instead of staying in the moment and taking it telephone pole by telephone pole, we look ahead at the giant outcome and we're overwhelmed. For me, and I've been married a couple times, so I'm a professional bride.
Hey, me
too. Are you? Okay.
I've been married and divorced twice. Yeah.
Well, I've got you beat, so we'll talk about that another time.
That could be another podcast.
But I've been married at least twice.
Well, that's why I'm not going to marry Steve, is because, you know, I can't divorce him. You know?
No, right. Exactly. You stop. Number three. Good advice. But I could never understand why a bride, you know, they call him Bridezilla, whatever, gets so overwhelmed. And I thought, what's the big deal? You talk, do the flowers, do the cake, you know, you get a photographer. But instead of doing all those things, I think they're just so focused on the day and all this other stuff. It seems like so much. And of course we're all in our 50s here, right? Except your grandson. So I probably won't hurt anyone's feelings, but I think we do that so much in every aspect of our life. We let everything overwhelm us. And when we do, that big event is too much, whether it's going back to school or taking on a job. We just have to break things down into bite-sized pieces, telephone pole to telephone pole to telephone pole. You don't always have to run. You don't always have to walk, but you just have to keep moving in the right direction. And eventually you'll get there. And that's how you run a marathon.
I love that, because that's exactly what I do when I'm running, or if I have a really super big project, is when I'm running, I'll say, I'm going to run to that corner. I'm going to run to that car. And you know, when you're running long distance, you really don't ever get limbered and warmed up till after the first mile anyway. So, and that's one of the things I've talked about too, sort of like time blocking. Like if you have this big project, it's exactly what you said. You just take, you know, like for 2 hours today, I'm going to work on this. And for 2 hours today, I'm going to work on this and whatever, you know, but people do. I used to do that all the time. I would get so overwhelmed by this big project that I wouldn't even get the little details right. Then by the time you get to the end of it, it sucks. It's awful. You really haven't done anything. So, but I love that running analogy. I think people should take that to heart and think about that whenever they're in a big project.
It took me, I'm glad you said that, because it's the same with projects. You can relate it to anything you want.
Yes.
And
yes,
even for me writing my book, and do you know, even though I know this, analogy, right? Telephone pole to telephone pole. It took my son, who wrote a book at the same time, we both wrote books last year, telling me to break it down. And once I knew what all my chapters would be, so that's the other thing. So many people say, oh, I want to write a book, but it's overwhelming. It's overwhelming because we're thinking of writing 40, 50, 60, 70,000 words like that. But if you think about it as each chapter is maybe a blog, right? Then you can get, that's what it took for me. And when I finally did it, I said, oh my gosh, it's the same thing, writing a book, running a marathon, doing a project, raising a family, getting through the day, yeah. Right? Breakfast, lunch, dinner, bedtime, bath, right. Homework, bah, right?
Yeah. I think two people get a lot, lose patience. They get impatient. You know, they want either the project over or they want the book written yesterday, without realizing that they have to work through the process. And I think a lot of that's just habits that people develop, you know, and not being able to put a project together. Well, we're going to wrap up because we've gone over my normal podcast time.
Oh.
But I do want to have you back on because I want to talk about network marketing.
Awesome.
Yeah. In another podcast. So we'll kind of break it up. If you're okay with that, because
I would love to. You're awesome. I could listen to you all day.
Oh, well, thank you. So I appreciate that. Yeah, we had a conversation about my voice, and Susan has made me realize I shall love my voice.
Love your voice and use it.
Mm-hmm. Yes, absolutely. So yeah, just to give a little teaser, you and I are both network marketers, I think in different companies. And I am on a mission with another guest who's been on a podcast of mine about the stigma with network marketing and how it can really benefit people, women over 50 in particular. If you're looking for something to do on your own, find a company. There's so many great companies with so many great missions. You know, there's something for everybody for your passion out there. So we're going to, listeners, anyone who's listening, we're going to come back and talk about this network marketing on a different podcast.
I would love that.
Because that could be another whole hour of talking about that.
Oh, yeah, for sure. Let's do it. Let's plan it.
Can you hear that thunder out there? It's like,
yes.
Oh, my gosh.
I thought it would. I can bang on my desk and we can make music.
Exactly. We are 10 inches over our normal year.
Where are you located again?
Southwest Missouri.
Missouri. Okay.
Yeah. Wow. So, hey, Susan, before we sign off, for anyone who's listening, I'm going to put all Susan's information down in the show notes so you can grab her book, go to her website.
Can I show a picture of it?
Oh, yes, 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 yes.
I put it on my desk. It's so pretty, isn't it? It's hard to see here. It doesn't look, but it's white and lemons and yellow.
It's very pretty. Yeah. If you go to her website, you'll see a fancy picture of her drinking out of a martini glass. I don't know what's in it, but I'm like, that's my girl and her martini.
Wow. It was fake. It was, yeah. I was just posing for the picture, but I do like a good lemon martini.
Yeah. So we'll put all that information down. But before you go, Susan, what piece of advice would you give my listeners? What is one thing that they can start today, do today, that can get them on a path to redesigning their life or, you know, doing what they've always wanted to do with themselves?
I'm going to give a piece of advice that they can actually do. Grab a pen, grab a piece of paper, and I want you to write down 10 things that are holding you back. And then you have to go through and decide to let more than half of them go. Just go. That you're not going to talk about it anymore. You're not going to bring it up. You're not going to lament over it with your girlfriend. You're just going to let it go. So at least over half of those things, some things we have to work on, we have to work through, but most things they're done. They're over with. They're spilled milk. There's nothing you can do about it except wipe it up and move on. So write that list down, cross off 5 things, done. Let it go.
I have to say that's the most original piece of advice I've gotten from a guest. That's great. In fact, I'm going to do that. I'm thinking, I'm like, because last night I was like lamenting about a lot of things. I'm like, I need to do this list. All right, people, you heard it here first. Thank you, Susan. I appreciate
you're awesome.
I guess.
Thank you, Shelley.